Welcome to episode 476 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Yep, we changed it up a little bit again, but, you know, we're getting into the hang of it now. This is, I think, our new thing. And Josh, you and I have not talked for like 3 weeks now.
Oh my gosh, it really has been that long. Wow. Yeah, it's been a crazy few weeks. You've been traveling. I had some crazy stuff happen. There was not a lot of news 1 week, which is good because that week was extra crazy. But we're back now, and there's a fair amount of news to cover and a fair amount of listener feedback. So instead of bantering about our crazy schedules, let's jump into that feedback. Some of this came in through Twitter. Our Twitter handle is DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. And some of it came in through email. The address there is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And I've had a couple of people lately say they tried using the contact form, and the first time it didn't work, and then the second time it did work. So if the contact form is being funny, I apologize, and maybe just email us, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. All right, so first I'm going to summarize a bunch of feedback that we got from people. I asked over the last couple of episodes, do you guys want to know about free games? The free games with gold from Xbox, the free games with PlayStation Plus, and the majority, but not all of you, the majority of you said, yes, keep the coverage, but don't spend a lot of time on it, basically. But I did hear from a lot of people that this is the show that reminds people to go out and get their free games. So we're going to keep it around. We're going to try and keep it short, but it will still be here so that you can remember to go grab all of those free games that you're probably never going to play. All right. Let's move on to some actual listener feedback. First one. This one also came in through Twitter. It's from LA Sooner. He says, I use MB exclusively. We had talked a little bit about MB on the last episode. He says, it's a faster experience than Plex, but it still might be because I have so many movies and TV shows. Plex just feels clunky with so many titles. I don't use the TV features anymore. I think he means live TV features, though it was pretty good when I did, but that was a few years ago. Ever since I got a Hopper 3, my life has gotten so much better. Man, I haven't heard anybody talk about a Hopper in a while.
It has been a while, and it's a shame because, you know, I really do think that Dish continues to put out great, great products.
Yeah. Yeah. So LA Sooner is not using anything that you and I use and that he's Hopper and MB, but I'm glad it's all working out really well for him.
Yeah.
And just adds to, the fact that we need to check out MB again because it has been a while. So
yeah, you
need to check that soon.
I was doing a little bit of research and I went onto the website and I was looking at it and it's like, you know, I used this before and I moved from Media Browser to Plex. Do I really want to go back to Media Browser now? I don't think I do. I don't know. I'm hard pressed to come up with a reason to do this.
Just to test it out. Maybe it is better. Who knows?
Maybe. I don't know. All right. Well, why don't I read the next one? It's from Henry. Henry says, hi guys, it's Henry again. And a recent media product is coming out and I was looking into getting it, but I want to get your guys' opinions on the product first. Thanks. It looks like an NVIDIA Shield with a screen and voice assistant built in. So he sent us a link, one of which I can't get to because it's a Facebook protected account and I'm not on Facebook. But he does, in fact, also provide us with a link to a product called Dabby. Josh, I've never heard of this product before.
Yeah, I had never heard of it either. This one's a little weird to me.
Now, let's be clear about this. This is in the category of things that I'm not even a journalist. I'm not a reporter. As a blogger, I don't like to cover because it's not real yet. I often say that I don't cover, well, I don't think it is anyway, but I don't cover Kickstarter stuff. This is coming to Kickstarter.
Right. Yeah. So it's really, really not real. Yeah, and I don't know about this. Like this, I do have access to the Facebook post, and so I was reading through the comments and everything, and some of their descriptions, and their descriptions just keep saying it'll play anything that you can watch online for free. And people are like, "What about NFL games? Yep. What about movies? Yes." And they just keep saying anything that's available online for free, you can watch it. And I just get vibes like all of those Cody boxes mm-hmm. that are, yeah, you can watch all sorts of stuff for free. It's illegal, but you can watch it for free.
Well, or something like Modulus, where sure, if it's free content or if it's subscribed content, you can get to it, but then it's basically a browser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So not, you know, we don't really know much here. It's so early on this product. It's interesting. They're saying that the Kickstarter price is going to be $150 and the device does look really neat. I'm not sure why it needs a screen on the side of it.
Because it's cool.
I guess. But do I need another screen next to my TV? No.
Well, yeah, maybe not. And is it in fact going to be next to your TV or in a cabinet or in an attic somewhere?
And if it's in an attic, I definitely don't need a screen on it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about where this is actually connected or how it's connected. But I mean, this is interesting, right? I'm glad to see that there are new companies that are playing in this space and that want to solve this problem for cord cutters. But I don't have a lot of faith in something that isn't out there yet. Does it sound interesting? Yes. Based on what they're talking about, would I buy it? I'm hard pressed on that, because I guess the question I would ask is, how is this better than the NVIDIA Shield? You can get an NVIDIA Shield these days for what, like $200? And they're really good boxes.
They are good. I think where it could end up being better is if the voice search is even better. Like if the voice search can really do practically anything, then I guess that's better. So I don't know. You don't know. No one really knows, except for maybe the folks from Dabby. We'll have links to this in the show notes if you want to check it out, especially if you're on Facebook and want to flaunt that over Richard. So one more message here, and it is from Rob W. He's got two things here. He says, "Hey guys, a few episodes ago, you were discussing who used Chromecast audio devices and if they made any sense. The device was seemingly made just for my setup. I've got in-ceiling speakers in rooms all over the house hooked up to a distribution amp. The Chromecast audios have been by far the easiest and cheapest way to get distributed and synced audio throughout the house. Trying to get something like a regular Chromecast with only its HDMI output to connect to my amp, which only has RCA inputs for each channel, was way too much of a hassle. I've got tons of groups set up between 5 Chromecast audio devices, and it usually works pretty flawlessly." I like that that combination of words there at the end. Anything to add here, Richard, before, because the rest of this message is on a completely different note.
Yeah, the only thing that I would throw in here is that, you know, the more that we spoke about the Chromecast audio, the more that I realized that almost from its kind of input capabilities alone, it provides a very different solution than the standard Chromecast did. The HDMI versus an audio input and or, you know, output, whatever, what, however you want to refer to that. And I get why that's important. And in fact, I even mentioned that roughly at about the same time that we learned that this was going away, we also learned that Amazon was coming out with a very similar device.
Right.
So, you know, there must be a need for this. It's just not something that I ever personally was interested in.
Mm-hmm. All right. The rest of his message says, "And Richard, can you explain what you're getting out of using something like a Drobo when I believe you have a PC running 24/7? I'm wanting to know if I'm missing out on something in my setup. I had looked at using a NAS device or an NVIDIA Shield for my Plex server, but my PC always performed so much better. And since it wasn't using that much power when idle, I just stuck with that as my server. I've got 24 terabytes of storage in the server and a cheap 4-drive external hard drive enclosure with another 24 terabytes that I use with SyncToy to do incremental 48 backups.
48 terabytes. I just did the math. 48 terabytes.
It's really only 24 because he's doing incremental backups every few days. That's hardcore. Backing up your movies and probably other stuff.
I probably should have done that.
I've tried to keep everything pretty simple, not even using RAID configurations, just a bunch of disk. Plex has no problem slinging around 5 separate HD streams to all of our devices when we're having family time, in quotes, and each watching something different. So would I gain anything significant from switching to something like a Drobo? Thanks for the show, guys.
All right. Well, this one is obviously meant for me to answer. So first off, Rob, you get so many geek creds from this message and everything that you mention in here. I can't even begin. But the bottom line for me is that I don't want to have to deal with RAID configuration. I don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to have to worry about the maintenance of that. I just want something that's going to work where I can hot swap drives and not have to worry about the technology behind it. And that is what Drobo is supposed to offer you. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, but that is also one of the things that QNAP solutions also offer, depending on what you're looking for. Now, could I just put it in a PC? Yeah. And I did that for years. I had banks of PCs with multiple drives running in them. At the time, they weren't so economical in terms of wattage that they were using. But sure, I have spare PCs running around, but the PCs that I buy these days are roughly the size of a Mac Mini. I'm not buying PCs that have big storage bays in them because I assume I'm going to use external storage.
Yeah. And I think to answer the root of his question, which was, should he switch from using a PC to a Drobo? Rob, I think for your setup, stick with what you got.
Right.
It sounds like it's working really, really well. And if you need to stream 5 HD streams concurrently, you're not going to beat the performance that you have now. There isn't a NAS or NVIDIA Shield or anything else, you know, like that, that is going to be powerful enough to do what you're currently doing.
Right. Like, you have the optimal solution for you. I just don't have those types of devices or that type of device that I can run these days in my home.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. All right. Well, thank you to everybody who reached out to us on Twitter and via email. Hopefully, we'll hear even more feedback from you guys in the coming weeks. So let's jump into our featured story this week. Not the kind of news that I like to lead with, Richard. Not at all, but it seems pretty important to make this one the first story.
It does. And I have to give credit here. Like, I heard about this through our friend Dave Zatz, mm-hmm. who reached out to me to say, hey, what's going on here?
Right. And we are talking about the ongoing saga, sort of indirectly related to HD Home Run Premium TV. That is the service that our friends over at Silicon Dust provide. It is a streaming pay TV solution that gives you, well, it used to be 45 channels for $35 a month. Now it's like 37 or 38 channels for that same price, because back in December, they lost a few channels due to a carriage dispute with, well, not with them, because they're not actually building the streaming service. They're getting it from a company called Omniverse. And Omniverse lost access to some channels. Well, it's gotten a whole lot worse. Omniverse is now being sued by the Alliance for Creativity and Entertainment. That's ACE for short. It's basically a collection of all of the major studios, and they're suing Omniverse essentially for copyright infringement.
And before we even go too far with that, I'm pretty much convinced, you know, I'm no lawyer, but I'm pretty much convinced is like, this seems awfully suspicious that all of a sudden when they're in a carriage dispute, that suddenly now, oh, their provider of content is going to be suing the carriage service. Like that just seems really suspicious to me.
It's an interesting take on things because a lot of people, and these are just random people on the internet, so I'll get into why I maybe shouldn't care, but a lot of people are saying, well, yeah, Omniverse is super sketchy. Like, we've never heard of these people. It sounds like maybe they got access to these streams through illegitimate reasons, and maybe Ace and these studios have a lot to stand on here, and Omniverse needs to be shut down.
Maybe it's the carrier that is kind of like the model for play on. No, I didn't say that out loud.
So I don't really know which. I'm not going to jump into the race for either party here, right? Because I don't know how legit Omniverse's contracts supposedly are.
Right.
And I don't know how legit of a case the studios have. But I've seen people saying that Silicon Dust should have known better than to make an agreement with a company like Omniverse and, you know, and stuff like that. Like, how can you make those statements when you don't know these contracts? You haven't read them. I haven't read them. And most of us aren't lawyers. So how about instead of just throwing a bunch of stupid comments across the internet, we actually wait for some real details and wait for some feedback from the companies involved, which, hey, that's actually our job here, Richard. So so we, of course, sent a message over to Ted Head, the CEO at Silicon Dust, and he gave us a statement that you've probably, like, if you're really following this and already know about this story, you've probably read this statement already because it's the same statement that he's given to everybody. He says, "Yes, we are aware of the situation from last week. Silicon Dust is not a party of the lawsuit, but we can be indirectly affected by Omniverse not being able to continue their service. And so we are in the process of finding out a way to best mitigate any potential interruptions to our service, and we'll let our customers know as soon as we know if there will be any change to the current services."
A fair statement.
Yeah. I mean, it's basically what you'd expect, right? They're not in the lawsuit. So again, what can they say? Just like the rest of us, how much do they really have to say? Because they're also not going to just tell us every little detail about all of their contracts with Omniverse.
Well, so, right. And quite frankly, they're probably also in firefighting mode right now, right? Like if I were, I would imagine that if I worked for or were a contractor for Silicon Dust, I would be in discussions now to try and figure out, okay, what are our options here? What can we do to do right by our customers? Our customers are not going to like it if they lose service. So can we switch to other services? Can we try and phase things out? Can we offer additional discounts? What can we do to make this right? And that's probably what they're trying to figure out right now. And we can't expect them to have answers yet because they don't know what's going on.
Right, right. So Omniverse did also respond, and their response, I do think, is kind of hilarious. Basically, what they say is, while Omniverse disagrees with the substance and the specifics of the allegations made against the company, they say Omniverse believes there is no place in the industry for media pirates, and consistent with the plaintiffs, we believe their legitimate business has been harmed by the unlicensed distribution of media content. So they're like, yep, piracy sucks. We hate piracy too. We're all on board with stopping the pirates, but that's not us.
They make us look bad, those pirates.
Right. Right. And maybe, again, maybe they're 100% correct. Maybe all of their arrangements are completely legit, and what they're doing is not piracy or copyright infringement or anything like that. But I just find that response comical. So if You're an HD Home Run premium TV subscriber. You have not lost any additional channels right now, but things are kind of dicey. But it's not like things typically go all that quickly through the legal system. So you might be okay for a little while, but it's definitely something that we're going to be keeping an eye on here. And we'll, of course, keep you updated as the court proceedings continue forward.
Absolutely. All right. Well, so let's move on into our topics. And our first video topic is about CBS streaming. So you've heard me rant about CBS All Access, and I need to figure out the name of the new CEO. I'm sure it's in this post, because I can't talk about Uncle Les anymore. Uncle Les is sitting at home in shame. So instead,
try not to sit in a jail cell.
Right. No ping. Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to go there. Okay. So in any event, CBS, as you know, has two major streaming offerings. They have CBS All Access and they have Showtime. And both of these streaming services are apparently doing really well for them. In fact, better than they planned on them doing by now. And I have to admit, I'm a little bit disappointed by this, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So according to CBS, the combination of CBS All Access and Showtime is getting them 8 million subscribers, which is up from 5 million that they reported last year. Their target by 2022 is 25 million. So this is a group that clearly wants to move the vast majority even of their viewers, because I can't imagine that they're getting 25 million on anything but crazy special events. But the vast majority of their users to a streaming platform and be a major competitor with companies like Netflix. And when they came out with CBS All Access, seriously, I thought they were nuts, because Hulu already existed, right? Hulu is here. Why don't you just play with them? Be a part of this thing that all the other networks have signed on for. Provide your content to customers the way they want. But no, Uncle Les was like, oh, our content's way more valuable. We're going to charge a premium for it. It turns out it's working for them.
It's really working for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
With crazy growth here. Like you mentioned last year's numbers, but in 2016, which is only 2.5 years ago, they were at 2 million. So they've gone 4x in 2.5 years. That's pretty solid growth. And I was looking forward to talking about this story with you, because you were like, Star Trek Discovery, it's all they got. It's not even that great. I don't think it's worth paying the money for, but it's not all they've got now. It is all they had when they launched.
Yeah. But I mean, arguably,
we've got the Twilight Zone coming back. We've got Twin Peaks.
Not yet. Right?
Right. But it's coming.
They have it coming. Star Trek Discovery is there. Twin Peaks is something unique to Showtime. So that's there now.
Oh, but, right. That's Showtime.
You know, these numbers are split between the two. That's the thing. And they say that the numbers are split pretty equally. So if they're at 8 million this year and they're split equally, let's assume that means that they have 4 million CBS All Access subscribers. Right. I kind of want to count Showtime out of this equation, because people are going to get Showtime as a premium. I don't think that counts the same way that a streaming alternative to a freely available network is, you know, I don't think that that's the same thing.
Hmm.
At least, I mean, in my mind, it's not. And that's why I had such an issue with them charging so much for this, because they're still charging, what, like $7 or $8 or something like that? I don't even remember what it is now. I think it's $6 or $7, and then it's $2 more if you don't want commercials for the CBS All Access. But they have three main shows on CBS All Access that are specific to CBS All Access. Discovery is obviously their main show there. They have The Good Fight, which they're actually thinking of bringing to broadcast now.
Oh,
which is interesting. Like, I don't quite understand that. And then they have another one that's coming that just started or something, and I'm not quite sure what that is. But the point is, it's doing well. People are paying for it, and I just don't get it. I really don't.
Is it just Star Trek fans?
Maybe. I mean, it could. Are there 4 million Star Trek fans? Maybe there are. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe not 4 million, but... So their limited commercial version is $5.99 a month. The commercial free version is $9.99 a month.
Okay, so $6 or $10. And the only way I would be paying for it is if I'm not getting commercials. So that would mean an additional $10. And I already have Hulu for something like $12 without commercials. So, yeah, I dislike the arrogance of CBS thinking their content is better than everybody else and offering less than everybody else and charging more for it. But it, hey, as a business, if it works for you, by the way, I own stock in CBS. if it works for you, great. That's awesome. Right?
And it's clearly working.
Yep. Still cool. Not subscribing.
All right. Well, would you subscribe to Epix as a standalone service?
I couldn't name one Epix show for you. Not one.
That makes two of us. But it'll cost you less than CBS All Access. The news here is that Epix is another one of those premium movie channels that you would add on to your cable subscription, like HBO and Showtime, except not nearly as well known,
right?
Not nearly as popular. And they get that. So when they decided to launch their own standalone streaming service, they made it less money. So maybe that's the best news here, is that it's only $6 a month instead of $10 for CBS All Access there, or
$15 for
HBO.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, less than half what an HBO subscription costs. Apparently you're going to get the same four live TV streams that you would get if you had this on your cable provider, plus their originals, which without looking up, neither Richard nor I can even name, plus in quote, thousands of movies. Here's what I think is the cool part about all of this. Some of this stuff is in 4K.
Yeah. That is a differentiator.
Yeah. And frankly, this is something that I thought about talking about last week on the show that didn't happen, is if you're really into 4K, cable and stuff like that isn't really it for you anymore. Because, and maybe I did talk about this on the last episode that I did, because we were talking about some of the shows that you can get on Amazon now are also in 4K.
Right.
And I can't get them in 4K on YouTube TV. Or certainly for my local cable provider, or over the air until ATSC 3 comes out in many, many years. So I think that is a pretty awesome deal. If a lot of this content is in 4K, I don't know, $6 a month to watch a bunch of movies in 4K, that might be worth it if it's a decent selection of movies. Because just one rental from like Vudu or something like that in 4K could cost you $6.
Sure. Now keep in mind their timeline is going to be aligned with other cable networks. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to get stuff in the same windows that you would see rental videos showing up on Vudu or things like that. You'd have to wait until they're available around the time that you'd be finding them on HBO or Showtime or what have you. What I'm not clear on is, what is the scope of their movies? Are they overlapping with others? Are they kind of, new movies as they come to others? Or are they more catalog titles? I don't really know anything about what's on the Epix network.
Yeah. And I thought about looking into stuff like that, but I'm also just not as up on the schedule of movies. You know, I could look at this and see some movies and go, oh, that sounds recent. I've heard of that recently, but maybe it's been available on Vudu for 5 months and I wouldn't necessarily know. So I guess the last important detail here is, how can you watch Epix? And they have an Apple TV app, and they have apps on Android and iOS. They have apps coming soon for Amazon Fire TV and Roku. So that's most things. It's not Xbox, so that kind of stinks. There's not PlayStation there, but Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV. Those are the big ones. Those are the big ones you got to have.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that is it for video. So let's talk about audio news. There is there's some interesting development in the audio space, and we missed this, I think, unless you reported it at some point, Josh, and I failed to notice. But a few months ago, Spotify came out with a feature where they allowed you to block an artist, to basically dislike an artist so that music from that artist would no longer show up in things that you were playing, like stations and music and so on. And that is like far greater control than you have with a lot of their other features, like thumbs up and thumbs down. Thumbs up and thumbs down really only allows you to initiate some control over stations, but this actually allows you to prevent an artist from ever showing up again in any playlist or any station or anything that you're playing unless you explicitly go to, say, an album of theirs. Well, Tidal recently saw their their offering and kind of bested them with not only allowing you to mute artists, but also allowing you to mute individual tracks. So if there's a particular song that you just never, ever, ever want to hear again, and it's in a playlist or it's in a station you're listening to or something like that, then it will be basically stricken from getting played. It will show up in your playlists. It will show up in stations, but it won't play. It'll get skipped automatically. This is a great feature that I have been, frankly, clamoring for years from most of these services, and I didn't understand why they didn't offer it. The reason, and this is really interesting, the reason that this is happening now is because of the broader social concern about specific artists, where someone may say, you know what? I think R. Kelly is a jerk, and I don't want to ever, ever support his efforts by streaming his music. So I am going to block him on my account. That is exactly why this capability was created and why these services are implementing it. But whatever the reason, I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, I had not thought of that angle. That's really important. Yeah. And you make the perfect example, because there's been all sorts of really bad news about R. Kelly lately. So yeah, that's a really great reason to not do this. Like, you wouldn't even necessarily, well, in the case of Tidal, the block button appears on the My Playing page. In Spotify, I haven't tried to do this yet. I wonder, could you just go to the R. Kelly page in Spotify and block him from there? Or would you have to wait until it shows up in the playlist to block it?
I don't know. I think you should try that sometime.
Right.
Because I don't have Spotify anymore.
Right, right.
And if I had the ability to have blocked artists, I probably could have salvaged my account, because they were throwing all this stuff in there that I just did not want to listen to.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm on the R. Kelly page, and I don't see options for blocking. But what I have heard is that the blocking functionality is not necessarily rolled out everywhere for Spotify yet, even though they announced it a long, long time ago.
Okay. Well, regardless, it's a good feature. I think for the social reasons that people are interested in it, I think it's good. Just as a general usability thing, I think it's something that these services have needed for a long time, so I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's move on to our gaming section. This will be fairly shortish, depending on how much Richard wants to rail on this topic.
I'm not going to rail. I'm going to go get a beer now.
That added this. So Activision, everyone's favorite game publisher, not really, especially not in the last couple of weeks. They've had a lot of bad news. They are offering refunds for a like 2.5 year old game. It is Guitar Hero Live. And if you can prove that you purchased the game sometime between December 1st of 2017 and January 1st of this year, 2019, they might give you a refund. They might. And the reason is the game included 42 tracks on the disc, and that's kind of a colloquial term, right? I mean, you might have bought it digitally. So it included 42 tracks, but they also had a service called Guitar Hero TV, which was basically a music video streaming service built into the app that eventually brought the library to almost 500 tracks that you could play along with on your little plastic guitar. Guitar Hero TV didn't cost you anything extra. It was included with the cost of the game. Well, last summer, Activision announced that Guitar Hero TV would be going away at the end of the year. It did. So that means that all of those extra, you know, almost 450 tracks aren't available now, and you can only play the original 42 tracks. And some people sued because that's what people do. And now Activision is offering some refunds to people. What are your thoughts on this, Richard?
You know, it's one of these things where you have this social, this isn't even social. You just have like this consumer outrage, and whether it's an entitlement or what, I don't quite know. But the result is that consumers ended up with some sort of compensation here. So, I mean, kind of, you know, I guess I'm glad. It's just weird that things get handled this way. You know, I had a very similar situation this past week where I'm looking at my British Airways account. I haven't flown British Airways in 6 years. And I looked at my British Airways account and I have like a bunch of miles in there. Like, why do I have miles in there? Oh, because of a class action lawsuit? Seriously? Come on, really? I mean, yay, but like, was I really upset about anything? I don't know. The whole thing's weird. But okay, good for people, I guess.
I guess. This seems kind of nuts to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why you need a refund. You paid for the game. You got a bunch of playtime out of it. You essentially got free access to a music streaming service added on to the cost of the game, and eventually that streaming service went away. If I subscribed to Spotify for 2 years and then it went away, I wouldn't be expecting a refund. I got my usage out of it for the 2 years.
Dude, you and I totally missed our opportunity to start an uprising to create a class action lawsuit about Ultimate Extras.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, come on. Microsoft right. did us wrong.
Oh, my gosh. How do you still remember things like Vista Ultimate Extras? Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah. I'm surprised that you and I are essentially on the same page here, that this is kind of bewildering that it's happening, and that, you know, just be happy that it happened, because I don't feel like you deserve it. Sorry. And I know that this is a big topic for a lot of people in the gaming community right now. Like, what happens when gaming services go away? Well, sorry, they go away. Like, things change. And sometimes that means that things do go away. But I can play Mario Brothers forever. Okay, that's cool. But you also didn't get anything extra from an online experience at the time for free. You know, if you're playing a free-to-play game right now and eventually it goes away, well, it's because all of that extra stuff that you were getting, whether it was free or not, cost money to run. Right. And eventually that stuff, if the usage isn't there, they're going to shut it down, because they're not just going to spend a bunch of money to maintain services that aren't driving revenue for them. So like, good for you if you get your money back from Guitar Hero. But if I was a Guitar Hero fan and played this game, I wouldn't be asking for my money back. I got my money's worth out of it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the reason stuff like this bugs me. There are so many times when companies legitimately do really crappy stuff and treat their customers poorly. What usually ends up happening is that you end up with cases where it's something that's non-consequential that creates one of these lawsuits or one of these class action kind of clamors. And that ends up getting the action from the vendor. And it just, it usually doesn't seem as important as the companies that are doing really bad stuff and the consumers who don't get accordingly compensated.
Right. All right, well, let's talk about some free games. And if this week wouldn't have been so insane, I would have added some more. I think going forward, there's other big stores now. You know, we've got the Epic Store, and they give away free games too. So as long as I can keep this a short, small, trim segment, I think it makes sense to add at least one of the other big stores when they're also giving away games for free. So on the Xbox, and you're going to hear a little bit fewer games than usual because of when the month falls and all that stuff. We're now in the second half of February, but for all of February, if you're an Xbox Live Gold subscriber, you can get Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon. This is basically like an old school Castlevania game. Again, that's on Xbox One. For the second half of February through the first half of March, Super Bomberman R. It's a Bomberman game. I don't think I need to say anything else. And for the last half of February, you get Star Wars Jedi Knight Jedi Academy. No, it's not a 360 game. It is an original Xbox game that is backward compatible. So you can still play this on your Xbox One. And it's Star Wars, like third-person shooter-y kind of game from way, way, way back when.
It's Star Wars. Just get it.
Right. It's Star Wars. Just get it. I like it. PlayStation Plus, free games for February on PlayStation 4, which is all we're going to cover here. For Honor, a big, huge online melee combat third-person PvP action game. I think it's third-person. Crap. Now I don't actually remember. It's been so long since I've played it. But this is a big deal. A lot of people still playing For Honor. It's Vikings, ninjas, you know, lots of different warriors like that. It's a pretty cool game and really well supported by Ubisoft. The other free game is Hitman, the complete first season. So this is the episodic Hitman that came out a couple years ago that a lot of people really liked as a complete season, but maybe not so much as individual episodes. Well, you get the whole thing for free on PlayStation 4. Now, we've usually not covered all of the like PS3 and Vita games that you got for free with PlayStation Plus. I'm not going to do it this month, and I'm never going to have to worry about it again, because after March 8th of this year, PS3 and PS Vita games will no longer be offered as part of PS Plus, their free monthly games. So if you've got one of those ancient systems, you're not going to be getting any more free games for it.
Hmm. When do you think that's going to happen for 360?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I'm not really sure, because backwards compatibility is actually a thing on the Xbox, where it's not really on PlayStation. So
yeah, and here we have this original Xbox game available just now.
Right. Here's a 17-year-old Xbox game. Right. Yeah, I don't know. I do think it makes sense that eventually they stop offering 360 games, but I think it really comes down to what they really do in the next generation. Is the next generation truly a new generation, or is it really just a continuation of this? Like, is every game that comes out in 2020 also going to work on an Xbox One? If it does, then maybe 360 games continue to be games that they include in Games with Gold. But if it's not, and it really is truly a generation like we're used to seeing from console generations, then at that point, the 360 is two generations old. Maybe they stop giving away those games at that point.
Yeah, maybe. We'll have to see.
Yeah. All right, so that's it for our news this week. Richard, you've been away for a while, so I'm guessing you've got a fair amount to cover in your entertainment center.
Don't I always?
Always.
Well, as I think I mentioned the last time we spoke, the folks over at Reset Forums have been helping out with my plight with my dead Drovo.
And you didn't even ask for it, right?
Well,
didn't Dave start this thread?
I didn't ask for it, but I did say when my Drovo died, and I said on this show that I'll have to start paying attention to what's going on over on Dave's show.
Oh, that's
because
right.
I know that they're all about the storage.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave started a forum thread specifically to help Richard replace his Drovo. And we'll have a link in that. Or we'll have a link in our show notes to that. And I greatly appreciate everybody's contributions there. I have been traveling for a long time and hadn't had time to pay any attention to it. And I just recently started engaging there. Not surprisingly, a number of people are suggesting QNAP devices. And that very well may end up being where I go. But I think in the long run, I'm still going to stay with a solution where I use my little, whatever, my tiny box PC still to be the actual server for Plex, and then just use the external device for storage. I'm not going to try and use it as a server because it won't be able to handle the transcoding as well as my PC can.
Right. Yep. Makes sense.
But there are a lot of great suggestions there, and I need to spend a little bit more time evaluating the options. I started pricing some things out, and you know, I have to consider into my price what I'm going to pay to Drovo to help recover my content, which I'm not happy about at all. But I have to do it, right? Because like it's easily worth $100 than to have to re-back up all of my content. That's just absurd. I'm not going to do it. It would take literally months to do it all. So, yeah. So anyway, thank you everybody over at Reset Forums. And I will try to continue the conversation there and keep you up to date on my thoughts. And I would appreciate any further thoughts that you have. One other hardware related piece is that you and I, when we were at CS, spoke with the folks at TiVo, and they know that we cover TiVo a lot and that we've reviewed TiVo boxes in the past. And so they ended up basically providing both you and I with TiVo boxes, the cable card box for me and the over-the-air box for you, respectively, so that we could try them out and talk about them, the latest versions of their boxes. And we've reported about them, but we haven't had any firsthand experience. So I have my box, which is the TiVo Bolt Vox, and I've hooked it up and basically decided to replace my main TiVo with this. Now, the main TiVo is input one on my family room TV. This is what Edward and I use as our primary television viewing experience. So I'm kind of all in on this.
Yeah, I'd say.
And so far, so good. I ended up having to talk to Verizon to transfer my cable card to that device. I actually had to swap cable cards because the one that I had in my old family room media, or my old media center, my old family room TiVo didn't work on the new TiVo, but I did have a newer card that did work. And that's a known problem that the new TiVo bolts don't work with older M card cable cards, but I did get a newer one to work with it. And that is actually doing really well. And the thing that I have to notice is, holy crap, this thing is fast. The guide is fast. The interface is fluid. The applications come up so fast compared to the way they operated on older TiVos that I've owned before. What I have to say is that some of the apps are kind of stale.
Mm.
Like the Hulu app and the Vudu app are both a little bit old. They're not the newest versions of those experiences. So clearly, TiVo is lower on the priority list for platform support for some of the vendors. And that's not surprising because the numbers aren't there.
Right, right. A lot fewer people with a TiVo in their house than a Roku.
Right, right. Exactly, exactly. Overall, though, I am pretty happy with it. One thing that I'm still working on with the folks at TiVo and their PR firm is that these boxes came to us connected to their, like, already activated on their own accounts, and they're not connected in any way to my existing TiVo account. So what that means is that my box can no longer view content from other TiVos in my home and can no longer drive the TiVo minis that are in my home. So that's something we're trying to work out and hopefully will get resolved so I can talk about how the new TiVo works with existing minis and other devices in the home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not an issue that most normal people would have.
Okay, fine. I'm not normal. Whatever. All right. 3 weeks have passed, so I've watched a lot of TV. I'll try to go through this quickly. Big Bang Theory and Modern Family, I've been keeping up with those. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt has started up. I've talked about that. That's the second half of the final season, and I'm working my way through that. Shameless, the last half of the most recent season has started again, so I am watching that again, but I'm not up to date yet. Trial and Error. You may have heard that I had watched the first season of Trial and Error, and I loved it. I watched it while the second season of Trial and Error was going on, and ended up buying the first season so that I can watch the second season. And then when I went to watch the second season, the episodes were no longer available to watch. Or buy. They are now available to purchase. So I ended up buying the season on iTunes, and I am watching them now, and they're hysterical. They're absolutely hysterical. I love them. It's a screwball comedy, and there is a big, big effort online to try and revive this series, to try and get like Netflix or someone like that to pick it up. Also, I think almost in the time that we haven't talked, I managed to watch most of Celebrity Big Brother because their celebrity seasons are ridiculously abbreviated. They play them like in a month's time because, you know, celebrities, they presumably have things to do. So
not anybody on this show.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I mentioned last time we talked that the Mooch was on. No, he wasn't really playing. Now, I don't believe that. I don't believe that he wasn't really playing. I think he decided, like 2 days in, like, holy crap, what did I do? I have to get myself out of this. And they came out with a creative way of pulling him out of the show, saying, big joke, he wasn't actually a player. In any event, it was an interesting season. I don't like the result. I don't think that the person who deserved to win won, but it was a much better season than last season, and many, many characters who were very colorful. Also, trying to keep up with This Is Us, but I am not up to date on that yet. Watching a couple more episodes of Hawaii Five-0, Game of Thrones. We are talking about that on Let's Talk About Thrones, and we are now recording episodes for season 6. So that's what I'm watching these days. Last Week Tonight has started up again, so we just started watching that. I declared bankruptcy on 2 shows. I decided that I had been recording, but didn't watch past episode 1 on Manifest because it was boring, and on Magnum PI because it was cute, but I didn't care enough. So I decided to just give up and say, okay, I won't record anymore.
I'm proud of you, Richard. That is not something that you normally do.
I know.
Impressive.
I know. Also, we watched a bunch of movies over the last couple of weeks. One of them, I don't know if anyone was even surely people were aware of it because it won the ratings, but I didn't know about it somehow. But apparently Fox did a live presentation of Rent. And so I found out about it and I thought, all right, well, that's interesting. So I want to see how they did that. And what was really interesting about it is that one of their actors was injured during the first night. And so, And so what they ended up showing was a combination of content from the first night, like their dress rehearsal the actual live show. So what they presented as live was mostly not actually live.
Oh, man.
Right.
That's kind of hilarious.
But it was good. Like, they did a really good job. And then after watching that, I decided to go back and watch the movie that they made of Rent. I'd never seen Rent on Broadway or off Broadway or whatever it was. But I knew a lot about it, and it was something that I eventually wanted to see. So I then watched the movie version. Movie version had star power, but it wasn't anywhere near as good as what Fox did. Fox did a really good job with this. What I found interesting is that it just seemed such an odd choice. I mean, it's 25 years later, something like that. And this is essentially about the crisis that New York was in during the height of AIDS. And for them to decide that this was the right time to show it, I didn't quite understand it because I didn't feel like this would resonate with audiences well. And the only thing that I can think of is that perhaps they thought that this... that the timing is right because of the opioid epidemic.
Mm.
And you have a similar situation where you have people dying all over the place in an epidemic fashion, and society as a whole is trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Right.
And how to face it. I was struggling trying to figure out why did they do this now? But in any event, it was good.
Yeah. Why not Cats? Cats are more popular than ever.
Cats was so weird. I did see that on Broadway. It was so weird. All right. I watched Fahrenheit 11-9. Yes, that sounds weird, right? That sure is the Michael Moore story about how Trump got elected. Now, you may like or hate Michael Moore. I don't know. He's very political. His political leanings are clear.
Right.
If you like his storytelling, then I think this is a movie that you will enjoy. It is enlightening more about events leading up to the election than about the actual election. I learned more about the problems and the politics behind Flint's water crisis than I ever knew from this movie.
Mm.
And that, to me, was really kind of the most revealing piece of this. I thought this was incredibly enlightening there. And along the lines of what he did originally with Flint, when he did the original movie that he created, Roger and Me.
Right.
So I thought it was worth a watch. I also mentioned previously that I was trying to watch the old versions of A Star Is Born. And so I've caught up on those. I've watched the Garland and Streisand versions now, in addition to that 1937 thing with nobody I'd ever heard of before. And today, the new A Star Is Born movie arrived on my doorstep. So I'm hoping that I get a chance to watch that this coming weekend. That's why I was watching all the previous episodes. By the way, the Garland version, oh my God, that was just tedious. 3 hours long.
Oh my gosh.
Tedious. And don't do it. Don't do it. She has a beautiful voice. She's beautiful. Don't do it. All right. Also watched The House with a Clock in Its Walls. Fun. Great. No. Fun. I don't recommend you buy it. Wait till it comes on cable. I did watch Bohemian Rhapsody, which I bought on disc so that we could watch it when it came out. And I loved it. I didn't know the history or the story behind a lot of why or how they came to be. and this was fascinating. And if you don't know much about how this movie was made, if I'm understanding it correctly, the remaining members of Queen own the rights to the movie. So they were intimately involved in ensuring that the story was accurate.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So great, great movie. I loved it. If you liked Queen, and frankly, I don't understand who wouldn't like Queen because they were a great band and had just such broad appeal. I highly recommend this. So that's it for what I was watching. One more thing, podcasts. I am so behind on podcasts, but I am now down to under just 3 weeks behind on my podcast. I was like 2 months behind just a couple weeks ago. So I am desperately trying to catch up. But one of my new favorite listens is a new show from my friend and co-podcaster, Jenny Josephson. She has a new show called Very Old Dad that is a highly produced storytelling show about her father growing old and dealing with it, and her family dealing with it. It is amazing.
Hmm.
It is NPR quality audio, and I highly recommend it to anyone who is living with an aging relative or parent. I'm so schmaltzy to begin with, but I was like, I had tears in my eyes while I was listening to most of it. It is so good.
Hmm.
That's not like it.
Her dad, is it?
It is her dad.
Oh, it is her dad. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. It is just fantastic. I hope this goes huge, and I think there's an opportunity for that to happen. So,
cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. Always long. What have you been up to?
So I wanted to get a quick plug in for one of my favorite all-time movies. I got notified on my phone while working on show notes that a movie that was in my Google Play wish list had dropped in price. And that movie is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. A 4K version had dropped to $9.99 on Google Play. And I'm like,
so good.
That's great. I should click buy. The cheapskate in me said, but what if it's cheaper somewhere else? If it's on sale here, it might be on sale other places. So I went on over to Amazon. It's even cheaper over at Amazon. You can get the 4K digital version for $7.99 from Amazon. And Amazon is part of Movies Anywhere. So
yep,
go over to Amazon, buy this, and it shows up everywhere. And it's an amazing movie in 4K. So there you go. There's a link to it in the show notes. Yes, it's an affiliate link. It's $7.99. Thanks.
Such a good choice.
Yeah. TiVo Bolt OTA, you mentioned some of this with your setup. You're coming from years of experience using TiVos. I have literally none experience using TiVos.
0 years.
Before, 0 years, 0 minutes experience using TiVo devices. So I do have it set up somewhat. I don't have all of the apps configured just yet. I have not unleashed my whole family on this yet. Like I said at the beginning of the show, it has been a ridiculous couple of weeks around here. Plus, I was out of town all weekend. So I am planning to get this set up soon, getting Netflix, getting Amazon, getting YouTube. Those are the three big ones in my house set up and configured for this. And then letting everyone, me, my wife, my 10-year-old, my 6-year-old, letting them all tell me what they think of the TiVo. The only real quick thought I have on it is the initial setup experience took a lot longer than I expected. It was probably a half an hour to get this thing set up from, you know, pulling it out of the box to actually using the thing.
Yep.
But, you know, it's one time. It's not that big of a deal. And then on the gaming side, I did play a couple of things. I played the Division 2 beta a couple weekends ago. I don't know if I can say a lot about it because it's one of those private beta things, but I'm going to say something anyway. It hasn't deterred me from wanting to buy The Division 2 when it comes out in about a month, almost exactly a month. So
that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot like the Division 1, but prettier in a different setting. And yeah, if you like the Division 1, you're probably going to like the Division 2. That sentiment is going to sound quite similar with this next game. I played a lot of, well, it felt like a lot, of Crackdown 3. This game finally came out on Xbox on Friday, February 15th, after years of being talked about. I really enjoyed the original Crackdown on Xbox 360 like 10 years ago or whenever that came out. It was just a lot of fun. Run around as basically a superhero cop, getting more and more special, crazy jumping and strength abilities and stuff like that, scaling buildings, throwing cars at bad guys. Like, it's a lot of fun getting so strong that you can punch people to death in one punch. Like, it's just a lot of fun. And Crackdown 3 is more of that. It is exactly more of that. If you liked the first Crackdown and you wanted more of Crackdown, that's what this is, and you're going to like it. If you were looking for a radically new and better experience from, you know, a new generation of consoles and many more years of experience and knowledge of what the video game industry can provide, it's not that. This isn't some earth-shattering game. It's not a 10. It's not going to be a Game of the Year recommendation. But it's a lot of fun if you're into this sort of game. And it's on Game Pass because every game published by Xbox Studios is now day and date available as part of Xbox Game Pass.
All right.
$10 gets you a month of access to Xbox Game Pass and access to over 100 games, including Crackdown 3. So if you're at all interested, you can do it for $10. And actually, if you haven't signed up for Xbox Game Pass before, or I think even if you have but aren't currently subscribed, you can get a month for $2 right now. So go and sign up and get Crackdown 3. It's a lot of fun. That's it. That's all I'm going to talk about right now. We'll have more coverage, hopefully, of the TiVo Bolt OTA for me next time. A little bit more in-depth coverage of those clear flow noise canceling headphones that I talked about before on probably our next episode as I get more time to play with all of those things.
Cool.
That's going to do it for this show. You can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook. We've got some other podcasts. Richard does one called Home On about smart home and connected home type stuff. Richard, what's going on with Home On?
Our next episode coming out is going to be with some folks from Leadvance talking about the Sylvania Smart Plus line. I have to give a little bit of a warning here. This one, I kind of expect that this is going to be a little bit delayed. I have crazy travel coming up, and I'm going to try and get this out between trips. So hopefully it won't be too long. In the meantime, the most recent episode that we released was our CES interviews. Hopefully you've had a chance to listen to that by now.
Cool. And our other podcast, of course, is Story Players, the video game spoiler cast. Our most recent episode, which just came out last week, episode 31, where we played the third episode of The Walking Dead season 4. So only one more episode left in that. And coming soon will be episode 2 of Life is Strange 2. There's a lot of numbers in this show. A lot of numbers. So we're going to be playing and recording that real soon. All right. And then normally we record the show live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. That was tricky this week and didn't end up happening, but it usually does. If you want to know for sure, follow us on Twitter. We always tweet about when the show will be, because that's going to do it for episode 476. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.
Right as my lights are turning off.
I was going to say, and you're in the dark.